Welcome to episode 416 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. I'm Peter Anderson. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In his book Outliers, The Story of Success, Malcolm Gladwell, Canadian journalist, author, and public speaker, repeatedly refers to something he calls a 10,000-hour rule. He asserts that the key to achieving true expertise in any skill is simply a matter of practicing, albeit in the correct way, for at least 10,000 hours. Some have argued with this premise, but what is indisputable is that successful undertakings require preparation. Whether it is in the athletic arena, in a concert hall, in a political debate, or on a calculus exam, a stellar performance is almost always preceded by training. If ever there was an advocate for education, it was Jesus. His entire ministry focused on teaching through parables, exposition, miracles, preaching. He taught the 12 and he taught the crowds. The Gospels frequently call him teacher or rabbi, suggestive of the popular reputation he gained for teaching. Indeed, more than once, he identified himself as a teacher, confirming the assessment of others. John 13, verse 13, "You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am." He understood that humanity, with the capacity to retain new information, process new ideas, and live a life that gets better and better with each new day and each discovery, is constantly developing and learning. We can glean an endless amount of inspiration and encouragement from Jesus as teacher. But in those moments when Jesus himself was being refined, he's a living example of how we should train our hearts, souls, and minds for our callings. His 40 days in the wilderness provide a model of pre-training commitment and preparation, focus, goal setting, and follow-through. Moreover, Jesus' three tests supply universal, foundational lessons on which to build a profession of your choice and a passion out of your calling. Test number one, Matthew 4, verses 3 to 4. "And the tempter came and said to him, 'If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread.' But he answered, 'It is written, man shall not live on bread alone.'" The lesson for us? Don't define success or orient your life around material gain. Test number two, Matthew 4, verses 5 to 7. "Then the devil took him to the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, 'If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone.' Jesus said to him, 'Again it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test.'" The lesson for us? Don't live your life recklessly and expect God to be the one to save you. You have to do the work. Test number three, Matthew 4, verses 8 to 10. "Again the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, 'All these I will give to you, if you will fall down and worship me.' Then Jesus said to him, 'Begone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve.'" The lesson for us? Whatever your priorities are in life, work, family, church, reputation, money, if any of it pushes God out of the top position, you're headed for a train wreck. As you are on the path of discovering your true passions, you can't compromise your belief system for anything or anyone. You absolutely must establish your convictions before you get out there in this chaotic and often manipulative world. You will inevitably face challenges, defeats, and temptations along the way. You won't be equipped to confront and rise above them if you don't put in the work and solidify your faith beforehand. When Jesus entered this world as a baby, he made himself not just our Savior, he became one of us. He faced the same trials that everyone faces. He had to rise above the same temptations that we all do. His triumph over sin and temptations wasn't simply to boost his reputation, it was to teach us how to navigate the treacherous waters around us. If we could or would take the time to absorb fully the lessons of his life, ours would never be the same. There's quite a bit to be said about Jesus' life leading up to the beginning of his ministry at age 30. One time, when he was just a preteen, Jesus went missing. After frantic searching, Mary and Joseph found their young son learning from and conversing with the leaders of the temple. Remember that exchange? After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him in Luke 2 verse 48, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." 3 days feel like an eternity to be without your child, especially a 12-year-old. If you were a parent, you likely would have been in hysterics at that point. And some of you might have come unglued at his response. Verse 49, "And he said to them, 'Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?'" Jesus' response had nothing to do with appeasing his stressed out parents. It was a teaching moment. He said he had to be in his father's house. That tells me that being in the father's house is important. Not just important, essential. At 12 years of age, Jesus was already demonstrating godly priorities, which he continued to do as stated in the next two verses, verses 51 and 52. "And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man." These two verses are such beautiful representations of his humanity. He was a child who had to obey his parents. As he grew up, stature, he learned things, wisdom. In other words, he wasn't born a super baby. He was born to develop and grow just like the rest of us. While we don't see any examples of Jesus in adolescence, there are certain indicators that he lived just like everybody else. For example, we know that he was a carpenter. During the period of time in which he lived, most tradesmen began their training in childhood. I like to picture Joseph teaching his son how to use a hammer or wield a blade. The King of Kings probably grew up with sawdust in his hair and blisters on his hands. Also, the story of his disappearance to the temple indicates that Jesus was not afraid of people but sought them out at an early age. Later in life, we see his commitment to building solid relationships within his recruitment of and ministry with the 12 disciples. The favor he bestowed upon social outcasts, lepers, tax collectors, prostitutes is indicative of his compassionate heart and embracing nature. He loved God and people and made an effort to be in positive relationship with both. Whereas many of us in today's world tend to compartmentalize our spiritual lives, professional lives, social lives, etc., we can see pretty clearly that that is not the example Jesus set. His lifestyle was such that in the verses above, Luke aligns Jesus' relationship with God and man within the same phrase. It's a powerful example and compelling thought, particularly for those of us who do not have jobs in a traditional ministry or Christian organization or business. Do you have different behaviors or guidelines when you're not with a typical church crowd? Is your professional lifestyle a departure from the way you behave at a church event or service? If the answer is yes, you're probably typical. And honestly, it may be difficult to judge which set of behaviors is better. You may be following some different rules while at a church event, but are you authentic? While you're at work, you may feel more like yourself, but are your behaviors or interactions with other people ones that honor God? It's worth remembering that God doesn't just see you when you're at church. He's omniscient and omnipresent, meaning he knows all and sees all. That shouldn't scare you. In fact, that should be a comfort to you. Nothing you can do can shock or surprise God. If there's any place that you should feel completely safe with all of your scars and mistakes and anger and hurt and joy and celebration, it should be at his feet. He can handle it all, and nothing you can do will diminish his love for you. And God can also help you to live a life that is consistent, a life that is authentic. Father, help us to be consistent in our spiritual walk. Help us to live such lives that we can have favor both with you and with men. That's our episode. Remember that God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full today.